I want to introduce our very special guest for this afternoon, Mr. Samuel Blumenfeld, who puts out the Blumenfeld Educational Letter. He's been our guest on a number of occasions in the past. Certainly there's nobody in America who is more aware, more up-to-date, more informed on the tragedy of American education that's resulted in America having one of the lowest SAT scores in the entire first world. In other words, among the first-class nations in the world, first-world nations, America's right down at the bottom, and of course, as you're going to learn this afternoon, this did not happen by accident. Mr. Blumenfeld, would you like to tell our listeners what you have discovered as you wrote the book, The Whole World, pardon me, The Whole Language OBE Fraud?
Well, I spent about 4 years researching this book, getting to the bottom of why we have a reading problem in America, why literacy is declining in a country which spends more money on education than any other nation in the history of the world. And I've come to the conclusion that it is deliberate, that the dumbing down of America is a deliberate policy on the part of the powers that run our education system. And I document that in my book, thoroughly documented, quoting, reliable sources, quoting original sources, so that anyone who reads this book will have no doubt whatever that the situation we have today, the burgeoning illiteracy and the dumbing down of the population is deliberately being caused by the educators themselves.
All right. Now, what is whole language?
Whole language is the method of teaching reading which discards the traditional phonics method and replaces it with a whole word or a configuration or an ideographic method of teaching children to read English. They're teaching children to read English as if it were Chinese, an ideographic writing system instead of a phonetic writing system. Now, if you impose an ideographic teaching technique on an alphabetic phonetic system, you get reading disability. You get learning disability. You get cognitive dysfunction. And this is being done all over the United States, and the schools are so surprised because there are so many kids who can't learn to read, so many kids who are now learning disabled, and it all starts in the first grade or sometimes even in kindergarten where the kids are being miseducated in this way to produce the results that they actually see. And you cannot impose an ideographic teaching technique on an alphabetic phonetic system for two very good reasons. In the first place, when you do that, the child develops whole language reflex, that is a holistic reflex. That is, the child will automatically look at the words as little pictures, as little configurations. And once a child does that, develops this holistic reflex, he or she automatically develops a blockage to seeing our phonetically constructed words in their phonetic structure. And that blockage causes dyslexia. Now, in order for a child to become a good fluent reader, he must develop a phonetic reflex. In other words, the child must learn that the letters stand for sounds and must be drilled in those letter sounds so that the child reacts automatically to the sight of letters. In other words, when the child sees the letters, he automatically associates them with sounds, and that creates a phonetic reflex. The whole language holistic method of teaching reading prevents the child from developing that phonetic reflex. And by doing that, they're denying the child the ability to become a good, fluent, accurate reader.
Now, does this in any way influence their ability to spell or to pronounce words?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, part of whole language is this so-called invented spelling, in which kids are encouraged to write even before they know how to spell, before they know how to hold a stylus or a pen. They're just told to write. And, of course, the kids have no idea how to spell anything, and so they write some of these most ridiculous spellings, which the teachers seem to think are so cute. But what they do is they create bad habits, which are very difficult to undo later on when you want to teach correct spelling.
And, of course,
spelling.
Go right ahead.
Well, you know, and the teachers will tell you, the educators will tell you that spelling is not terribly important. Correct spelling is not terribly important. But as you and I know, the career of Dan Quayle was ruined because he misspelled a word.
Potato.
Yes, and so how can they assert that spelling is not important when the career of a major politician is permanently damaged because of the misspelling of a very simple word? I mean, they're misleading the kids into thinking that spelling is not important, and yet when these kids go out into the job market and can't spell correctly, they're going to be held up to ridicule, or they simply won't get the job, and they will be handicapped for the rest of their lives. And yet this is what the schools are doing, and they're very proud of what they're doing, and yet they're ruining the careers, the futures of millions of children.
And, of course, as we're going to explore in just a very, very few minutes, this is not happening accidentally.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, we're going to have to take our first break here at Radio Liberty, and as long as we're talking about education, let me talk about a book that will help you, as the listener out there, to understand how this all came about. It's a book which we've republished because it's been out of print for many years. It's entitled Foundations, Their Power and Influence, and it goes into a long-range plan that's been in force for almost a century now, by which our great foundations, Carnegie and Rockefeller and then eventually Ford, moved into reorienting the education of America. As you're going to hear very shortly, John Dewey played a very important part in the tragedy of American education. Of course, he was actually funded by the great tax-exempt foundations. The book, Foundations, Their Power and Influence, written by the Council for the Reese Committee, the Reese Committee was actually appointed by the 83rd Congress to find out what the foundations were doing. Their findings were so frightening that they were actively suppressed by the media. They were suppressed so that you couldn't get copies of that report anyplace. The book, which was written, we're talking about foundations, their power and influence, has been actively suppressed. And the first publisher couldn't get it distributed. The second publisher couldn't get it distributed. I was personally given the plates. We borrowed the money. We published it. You need to read Foundations, Their Power and Influence. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this afternoon, Mr. Samuel Blumenfeld, who publishes the Blumenfeld Educational Letter, and, of course, his book, The Whole Language OBE Fraud. Mr. Blumenfeld, can you tell people how they can, first of all, get your newsletter, and secondly, get copies of this great book, which has been recommended by so many prominent people across America?
Well, the easiest way to get the book is to call my publisher and in Idaho, and his number is 1-208-322-4440. That's 1-208-322-4440.
Right. And can they get the newsletter there, the same place?
Yes, I'm sure that my publisher will be more than happy to send them a free sample copy of the newsletter.
All right, fine. Well, we were talking about the whole language, the look-say type of reading. Does this have anything to do with the attention deficit disorder we hear so much about? You know, when I went to school, we never heard of attention deficit disorder.
That's right. And when I went to school, there was no such thing as attention deficit disorder. And that's because the way our schools were configured, there was no possibility of your having an attention deficit. I don't know, Dr. Monteith, if you had you were in the same kind of classroom that I was in, but our desks were arranged in rows, and they were bolted to the floor, and our attention was riveted, focused on the teacher who sat at the front of the room. And she taught all of us the same thing. There was no such thing as an individual education plan. Everybody learned the same thing. You didn't talk to your neighbors. There was discipline. And so you couldn't possibly have an attention deficit, problem there because your attention was focused. And everybody was learning the same thing. Well, today, of course, things are totally different. You walk into today's first grade classroom, and what do you see? Kids are seated around little tables. They're pestering one another. They're talking to one another. They're distracting one another. The teacher roams around the room. She's no longer the focus of attention. She's now a facilitator. The walls are covered with all kinds of distractions. The room is noisy. And kids can't, and everybody has an individual education plan. So everybody's doing something different. And so there are a lot of kids who find it very difficult to concentrate in such a chaotic atmosphere. And they are the ones who are seriously handicapped by this school configuration, this classroom configuration, which is now the dominant form of classroom configuration in America. And so these kids develop what they call attention deficit, what they call attention deficit disorder. What it simply means is that this child is unable to concentrate and is easily distracted by everything that's going on in that classroom.
And, of course, with the teacher being unable to discipline the kids and yell at them and grab their ear as they did when I was in school, if they got too far out of line, or send them down to the principal for a little posterior rehabilitation, when there's really no discipline in the school, then how can a teacher really teach? Kids need discipline.
Right, and not only that, but when you add to that, to all of that chaos, these faulty teaching methods, this kind of miseducation that is being foisted on the children, then you really do a job on these kids. Not only can't they concentrate, but they can't even learn what they're expected to learn.
And that's,
they're trying to learn to read, and they're being taught in a way that makes it impossible for them to develop a phonetic reflex. And they are in this incredibly chaotic, noisy, distracting room. And of course, there are a lot of kids who simply can't make it in that kind of an atmosphere. Now, we're often told, well, why doesn't everyone get attention deficit disorder? Well, there are some kids who have nerves of steel and can do the work.
Sure. And, of course, certain children need that discipline, and other children can get by without it. They have a self-discipline. Now, where does John Dewey fit into this whole incredible story of educational malpractice, which has become the norm in America today?
Well, John Dewey was the chief philosopher for the progressive movement. And in 1898, he wrote a very important essay entitled The Primary Education Fetish, in which he took to task the tremendous emphasis that we put on literacy in the early grades. He said, it is almost an unquestioned assumption of educational theory and practice both, that the first 3 years of a child's school life shall be mainly taken up with learning to read and write his own language. It does not follow, however, that because this course was once wise, it is so any longer. My proposition is that conditions have undergone such a radical change that the time has come for a thoroughgoing examination of the emphasis put upon linguistic work in elementary instruction. The plea for the predominance of learning to read in early school life because of the great importance attaching to literature seems to me a perversion, unquote.
And, of course, then it used to be, of course, that children were reading in the first and second grade, and now they're not allowed even to begin to do this. They keep delaying, and they miss the best time to learn, don't they?
Well, you have children who are coming out, young adults coming out of 12 years of public school education functionally illiterate.
I know I have a friend who's a kindergarten teacher, and she told me that she tried to teach the children to begin to read in kindergarten. Of course, she was chastised for this. You're not supposed to do that, she was told. You have to wait and wait and wait before you begin to teach them to read. And yet, can't children learn to read at 5 and 6 or 4 even?
Oh, yes, if they're taught correctly. If they're taught in the proper phonetic way, kids can learn to read. I had one little girl who learned to read at the age of 3 and a half. She started with my Alpha Phonics book, and by the time she was 4, she had completed the whole program. So we know that some kids can learn to read very early.
Well, now the next question is, did John Dewey realize that he was introducing a program that was guaranteed to fail into the American educational system? Did John Dewey have another agenda?
Yes, his agenda was to change America from a capitalist, individualistic, believing nation into a socialist, collectivist, atheist, or humanist country. And he and his colleagues were determined to make that change in America. They embarked on a messianic mission to do it. And they realized that American adults were not about to give up their private property or their religions or their individuality. So he and his colleagues decided that they would have to work on the children. And in order to do that, they decided to completely reform, change, alter the curriculum of the schools so that the curriculum that the children would be exposed to would create little socialists. He wrote in that same essay, he said, quote, change must come gradually. To force it unduly would compromise its final success by favoring a violent reaction, unquote.
In other words, he was afraid that the American people were going to wake up to this treacherous plan that he and his confreres had.
Right. And so that's why they did it so gradually, because they realized that if you did it all at once, that the population would wake up. I mean, he says a violent reaction. And of course, what has happened is that over the years, the change has been so gradual that people haven't really been aware of it until most recently, when the results have been so horrendous that parents have no choice but to wake up. You know, it's like the story of the frog in the water. If you throw a frog in boiling water, he'll immediately jump out. But if you put him in cold water and gradually heat it, he won't be able to jump out. He'll stay there and won't realize that he's being boiled to death. And that's what's happened to us in America here. The progressives who took over early in this century have very gradually imposed their curriculum, their ideas on the entire education system, beginning with the teachers' colleges, with the universities, and filtering down to the first grade classroom teachers. And so what we have now is exactly what the progressives have wanted, a system that deliberately dumbs down every child that enters it. And so I tell parents that if you don't want your child to be dumbed down, if you don't want your child to develop cognitive dysfunction, a reading problem, or a learning disability, do not under any circumstances put your child in a public school. Because even though there are some children who manage to come out okay, the risk is so great that, at least 40% of the kids now are becoming learning disabled because of this method. And as you know now, with attention deficit disorder, you have this tremendous amount of Ritalin that the kids are being drugged with just to keep them quiet so that they can sit in their seats and absorb this miseducation which is being directed at them.
And, of course, the indoctrination in socialism, dependence upon government, government's responsible for taking care of us from the cradle to the grave. Wasn't John Dewey one of the signers of the Humanist Manifesto, a statement that laid out a plan by which children were to be taught that there are no values, there's no right or wrong, abortion's all right, euthanasia's all right, homosexuality's all right, and every individual makes up their mind as to what is correct rather than any sort of divine law or a law that tells people what's right and wrong?
Yeah, they've destroyed absolutes. They've destroyed moral absolutes. And this was all done by the humanists. So what we really have today in America is the public schools are humanist parochial schools. That's all they are, because they exclude every other religion. And you know how fiercely they fight to keep Christianity out of the schools, Bible out of the schools.
But secular humanism is a religion. It's a Supreme Court has held it's a religion, and yet it is the religion of our schools today.
Right, and even the humanists admit that it's a religion. They call it religious humanism, and a great many humanists, see it as a religious alternative to, Catholicism and Protestantism and Judaism. They call it the fourth religion. And that's what we have in the public schools, humanist parochial schools. As a matter of fact, an awful lot of the top people in the school system, running the school system, are humanists, Unitarian Universalists, who are basically humanists.
Now, what is the relationship between modern-day education, the progressive education of John Dewey, and the rising delinquency rates among our adolescents?
Well, we have discovered that reading disability causes such frustration among some kids that they react violently. In other words, frustration leads to violence, delinquency. You take, for example, what happened in Los Angeles, when you had that big explosion, that incredible explosion over the O.J. Simpson thing. That was just the spark that set off this incredible blaze. You had 100,000 young gang members. These gang members are basically functionally illiterate. All you have to do is listen to them when they're being interviewed on radio or television, and they can barely speak English with any skill. And what happens to those kids when they leave school and can't get any decent jobs and are resentful of a system that dumbed them down? They know they've been dumbed down because they know that when they entered school, they felt very intelligent. They taught themselves to speak their own language, and they figured they could learn to read. But then they became reading failures. They became functionally illiterate. And naturally, they're going to blame the system. And so you get 100,000 of these little walking time bombs in a place like central Los Angeles, and you got the kind of conflagration that occurred because of the O.J. Simpson thing. That was the spark. Not the O.J. Simpson. It was the other,
Rodney King, right.
Yeah, Rodney King, I'm sorry. It was a Rodney King episode.
But these kids, they're into gangs, they're into violence, they're into drugs, and of course a lot of it is understandable. That doesn't excuse them, but it certainly is understandable, and those of us who've allowed it to happen bear responsibility for it. We're going to have to take another quick break here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our special guest this afternoon, Mr. Samuel Blumenfeld, who puts out an educational newsletter. He's written a new book, The Whole Language OBE Fraud, and if you can get the book by calling 208-322-4440. That's 208-322-4440. And I can say without hesitation that Mr. Blumenfeld's educational newsletter is the finest one in the nation because we've taken it, read it regularly for many years, and some of the incredible things that are happening in education really are going to impact on our society. They're impacting on it now as we have more and more young people becoming frustrated. It's said that many of the top high school graduates entering college to our finest colleges around the country, 40 or 50% of them have to take supplementary English because they've never learned English in high school, and they have to take what they call bonehead English. You agree? Maybe you have a comment. Right now we have Tom on the line. Hi, Tom.
Good afternoon.
Hi, do you have a question or comment?
Both. It seems there's a growing awareness in America that that we've been undergoing a process of this gradual socialism, and that it's basically a failed philosophy. It's the idea of coercion over persuasion. And it seems to me in the beginning of this country that when we were kind of more of one mind, one religion, very similar worldview, ethnic, and so forth and so on, that public education made sense. But in this melting pot that we have become, I feel that all public education should be abolished, and it should be just totally private school to allow for great diversity. And I was wondering how your guest feels that as a solution to this, and about my reasoning too.
All right. Did you get the question?
Oh yes. As a matter of fact, I agree with the caller 100%. I believe that the only way that we can solve our education problem is to get the government out of the education business and to put it back into the private sector where it was at the very beginning of our country. Back in those days, in the colonial days, you had some common schools in Massachusetts which were supported by towns, partially, but there was no such thing as compulsory school attendance. You know, there was no such thing as a centralized education bureaucracy. There were just local schools that were partially supported by the local communities, and local communities decided what to teach and how to teach it and who was to do the teaching, etc. But what we have today is a Prussian system, a highly centralized, bureaucratized system that no longer serves the students but serves the education establishment, particularly the National Education Association, which has become a very powerful political lobby. As a matter of fact, they are the ones who are practically going to try to get President Clinton reelected. And they were greatly shocked when Republicans took over Congress, but they hope to be able to recoup their losses. But it's because of the politics that is now so much a part of education that has really destroyed it. And so we've got to get away from government schools. The best way to do that is for parents to simply remove their children from the government schools and to homeschool them or put them in private schools in which they have confidence.
I have heard that back, you know, in about 1820, we had something like a 90 to 95% literacy in America, and now we've got 90 million illiterates. Is there any truth to that?
Well, of course there is, because you see, in the early days of this country, biblical literacy was an absolute must. You see, this country was founded by highly literate Protestants who came to the New World to establish the Bible Commonwealth. And of course, in order to create some kind of civilization here, they relied heavily on the Bible. And so you had to read the Bible. You had to be literate. And so teaching and schooling and education has always been an extremely important part of the social fabric of this country. But it began with a religious viewpoint, a religious basis, not one just for being able to read silly novels, but for being able to read the Word of God so that they could build a civilization worthy of God's approval.
And wasn't it that the vast majority of our universities, Princeton and Yale and Harvard, were all basically religious schools, started out with religious contracts and prayer and study of the Bible and God's Word was required?
Oh, absolutely. Those universities were basically created in order to produce a learned clergy. That was true of Harvard and Yale and Princeton, and virtually every university in this country was founded by religious groups for a religious purpose. And it was when Harvard University became Unitarian and expelled the Calvinists in around 1804 that the entire education system began to become liberal and began to become humanist. And this is due to the work of the Unitarians at Harvard University, and their philosophy spread throughout the academic world. Of course, there were some holdouts. Yale held out for quite a while. Princeton held out for quite a while and resisted the liberalization, the religious liberalization. And eventually, just about when the government took over the schools and brought about this so-called separation of church and state, which really is the separation of religion and state, the separation of Bible and state, you have now your great state universities, which are basically pagan or humanist at best, and which are turning out, you know, hundreds of thousands of young American pagans. And this is not doing us any good as we look at the moral decline in this country.
No, it sure doesn't. Tom, do you have anything else to ask?
Yeah, it seems like what you're presenting there is one of the primary reasons why we should do away with public education, because there are so many different world views, and people who really want to preach diversity, if they really mean what they say, they should really support private education. But because we have so many different views, it makes it impossible to teach morality in a public school. And that's why we have all these kind of wild kids running around with that seem to have no moral background. The question I have, I've heard somewhere to the fact that in a public school there's something like 139 bureaucrats per 100 teachers, and then in a public school there's something like 20 bureaucrats per teacher. Do you know the exact figures on that?
No, I don't, but I know of what you speak. There have been studies made to show that private schools have fewer administrators per pupil, whereas the public schools are top-heavy in administrators. Every school district, you know, has its special bureaucracy with its directors, a superintendent, an assistant superintendent, a curriculum director, an assistant curriculum director, et cetera, et cetera. And all of this is costing the taxpayer a great deal of money. And the reason why you have all of those positions is because these universities, these colleges of education, keep graduating these doctors of education, and they need jobs. And so the education establishment creates these jobs for these graduates. Because if these jobs didn't exist, if these positions didn't exist, these people might have to go into something else, like running a restaurant or driving a cab. And that's the last thing they want to do.
Sure. Of course, when you get into one of these positions, you get great hours, you get great benefits, you get a salary far and above what the guy who's out there paying the taxes, and then, of course, you get off 3 months a year, you get a sabbatical, and Of course, you get great retirement. Thanks so much, Tom.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Dudley. Hi, Dudley.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Question or comment for Mr. Blumenfeld?
Well, a couple. Well, first of all, I don't see how we're to get rid of our public school system. What I think that we could do is, like my daughter lives down in Southern California, and a great many of the students in the public school are Asians, and so it's very high academically. A lot of these, the parents are coming over from Hong Kong anyway. What they all do is they have a Saturday school in Chinese. So it seems to me as though if we had the public schools, because we need them, you know, are in our church Sunday schools and do something like that. So how can we ever get rid of public education?
Well, the only way that questions. Are you there?
Yes, go ahead.
The only way that we can get rid of public education is for the parents really to abandon it, for more and more parents to leave the schools. And this is happening as more and more parents discover that the kids are really at risk in the public schools. For example, this summer I did a good deal of speaking at homeschool conventions, that is in the spring and the summer, and we've noticed that there's a growing number of people, of parents, young parents, removing their children from the public schools and doing it in a hurry, almost in a state of panic, because they know that they can't put their children back in the schools, because they know that the change is being made, you know, this outcome-based education, all of this that's being done now in the name of school reform, this school-to-work business, this careers business, all of that is going to drastically change American public education. It's going to remove every last vestige of traditional education and put in its place a job training program, in which children will be trained for specific jobs, and they will be on a computer, and everything will be known about them, and they will be taught how to jump through hoops, and they will not be given the kind of general basic cultural education which we were given back in the traditional days. So a lot of parents have realized this, and at the homeschool conventions, we have noticed a tremendous influx of these new parents. And I assume that this is going to, I'm pretty certain that this whole movement out of the public schools and into the homeschool movement is going to accelerate in the years ahead as parents see what's being done in their local schools.
And I see this in our own community. I know Baymont Christian School out in Scotts Valley struggled for many years. Now it's full up. Monterey Bay Academy, Monta Vista Christian Schools, just on this part of the bay. You just can't get your children in there. And yet 10 years ago, they were just begging for kids to come. So
yeah.
People are beginning to wake up. But in the meantime, we're losing an awful lot of good children. Dudley on the line. Dudley, do you have another question or comment?
I have a copy of your newsletter from a year ago. I've enjoyed it. But the question, it seems to me, is though homeschooling is mainly for the better educated, for the middle class and on up, so the other classes don't benefit. What about vouchers in order to try and do something?
Now, do you have a comment on the voucher system?
Well, the only thing that's wrong with the voucher system is that it's going to be run by the government, and anything run by the government is immediately suspect, because you have to understand that all of those people, the education establishment, will simply do everything in their power to fashion the vouchers to suit their needs, to suit their benefits. And so you can't trust a government program to do this job. It's got to be done privately. I'm in favor of private vouchers, but not government vouchers.
Okay, anything else, Dudley?
Well, what about the fact that at present, it seems to me, and in the future, the only people who can do homeschooling are the ones who are better educated, so they have a large segment of society that won't be able to involve themselves in it.
Well, we already have that. You see, that the problem is that the poorer people are the ones who are really being handicapped and destroyed by the education system. They are being severely dumbed down. The thing is that a lot of the private schools are not all that expensive, especially the small Christian schools. They're not all that expensive. You know, there are going to be casualties in this. We're in a war. We are in a spiritual war in this country, and in every war there are casualties. And a lot of people are going to suffer because of what the education system is going to do to them. If they don't have the means to to get out of the system. If they don't have the intelligence to get out of the system, then they will become the victims of the system. And there's not very much that you or I can do about it. What I'm telling parents is first care for your own. And I'm alarming parents, and fortunately many parents are beginning to wake up. But there will always be those who will permit themselves to be victimized by the system. And we do the best we can to warn them and to alert them, but if it falls on deaf ears, then there's not much more we can do.
How do you feel about the churches, every church in America forming a little school, maybe a one-room school, or two or three rooms, and gradually building up to the point where the churches can begin to educate their own children and other children in the community?
Oh, I'm all in favor of that. In fact, I believe that the churches have a duty and a responsibility to make sure that these kids get a decent cultural and spiritual education. And they should, you know, what grieves me is that so many Christian ministers are not telling their parishioners, their congregations, to remove their children from the public schools.
Well, that's why programs such as this, I think, are so important. Thanks so very much, Dudley.
Thank you.
And let's go to Ron from Paso Robles, and Ron's a teacher himself. Ron, what do you think about this?
Well, how are you, Dr. Stan?
I'm doing fine.
I'd just like to make a comment that everything he's saying is correct. The public schools, I call them government schools, create learning problems, and reading is an auditory vocal process, which means that you have to hear the sounds. Now, you can teach a person to read through Braille, but try and teach a deaf person to read. It's almost virtually impossible if he's never, you know, read before. Now, the early grades, kindergarten right on through are a disaster. There's noise going around. Teachers walk around. Teacher can't control the kids. Parents have no idea what goes on in the government schools. And what they do, they have so many kids with learning problems, reading problems, and so forth, that they come up with the attention deficit disorder. This is a cop-out. They got to blame something, so this is what they chose.
Sure.
So, I just wanted to kind of add that, but I think this conversation you're having today is great.
Thanks so very much. Bye-bye, Ron. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. One of the titles, titles to a chapter in your book is The Psychologist's Best Kept Secret. What's the psychologist's best kept secret?
Well, the best kept secret is that they have been experimenting on ways to artificially create behavioral dysfunction, cognitive dysfunction. These experiments went on in the Soviet Union in the 1920s, and as a matter of fact, by 1933, the Soviet psychologist Alexander Luria wrote a book on the subject describing the experiments that had been conducted to show how you can artificially create behavioral disorder. And the way you do it is that you stimulate the victim or the subject with conflicting reflexes.
Conflicting information or reflexes, or
conflicting reflexes, so right. That the person has a cognitive breakdown.
A cognitive disassociation, then.
Yes, cognitive. I would call it a kind of learning breakdown.
Right.
Because they cannot respond to two conflicting reflexes. I'll give you a very simple illustration of how that works. We in the United States learn to drive on the right side of the road, and so we develop a right side reflex. However, if you go to England, you've got to drive on the left side of the road. Now, if you've been driving all your life on the right side of the road, suddenly you've got to drive on the left side. You cannot use your right side reflex. You've got to suddenly stop and think of what you're doing, you know, at every intersection, every roundabout, or, you know. And so there you have what happens is that you have a learning dysfunction. You have a dysfunction at that point. But the only thing that gets you through is your ability to use your brain, you see. Well, that's okay for an adult, but a child of 5 and 6 cannot do that. And their brains are very vulnerable to this sort of conflict, this reflex conflict, while the brains of adults, you know, at least they, They have the smarts to be able to figure things out. And so even if you give them a conflicting reflex, they will understand that that's what's happening, and they'll make amends for it.
Have they been doing that to our children here in America?
Oh, absolutely. That's the key, you see, is by inflicting these, as I said, the holistic reflex conflicts with the phonetic reflex. You see, and that's why many of these homeschool teachers will tell you that they also teach phonics.
Sure.
And the reason why they do that, they may not know it, but the reason why that is done is to produce the conflict between the holistic reflex and the potential phonetic reflex.
Okay, we've got Inez. Inez, anything quick? Just about out of time.
Yes, just a quick comment, Dr. Stan. On a previous caller who had said that only the middle class and the well-educated could homeschool, I'd just like to make a correction that these days there's so much good curriculum written now. 10 years ago that might have been the case, 15 years ago. But now there's so much written that's parent-friendly, that's parent-guided, that spells it out so well that those with a high school education can definitely get the right guidance to homeschool their children, at least in the primary grades, and get it going, and
okay,
then maybe coordinate with other parents to do maybe the upper level classes. Okay. My sister, for example,
we got to run. We're out of time. But if anybody wants to know more about this, give us a call. And if you'd like to stay on the line, Inez, and give your telephone number to our producer, if anybody wants to call in, they can get in touch with you. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Fine. Wash, if you wouldn't mind picking up the. Line one there, just get the address and telephone number so we can get in touch with Inez in case somebody else out wants to get in touch with her. Mr. Blumenfeld, thank you so very much for being our guest this afternoon. I hope we can get you back on one of our evening programs sometime.
I'll be more than delighted to do so.
And let me give that telephone number again. It's 208-322-4440, either to get the education newsletter or to get the book, The Whole Language OBE Fraud, and believe me, it's a fraud. Bye-bye, sir, and may the Lord be with you.